This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. John Dunn became president of Western Michigan University in 2007. Earlier this year, he announced that he will retire on June 30th, 2017. We will discuss that decision and other issues with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Thank you for being here.
Gordon, very nice to be with you, and also Madison from the Kalamazoo Gazette. Thank you.
And the Kalamazoo Gazette's Madison Bennett is here as well.
Happy to be here.
And you have the first question for President Dunn.
So, President Dunn, you know, what's your takeaway after almost 10 years of being president of Western Michigan?
Well, it's been a real pleasure and a great honor to be the president of this marvelous university. There are many things that I feel very good about. First and foremost, maybe the interaction with our students. And I've really grown to love the student at our university. There are other accomplishments that you feel good about, certainly school medicine. We've had some nice building additions. Not only the buildings themselves and the importance that they play on our university campus, but the fact that we were able to, in a really difficult economic time, put a lot of people to work and provide an opportunity for people to generate income and food for their families and loved ones. And that's, you know, sometimes we overlook that, but that's very, very important and very special. Heritage Hall, I always will understand and appreciate and respect people who felt very strongly about East Campus and what needed to be done there. And, you know, we didn't meet all of the goals and desires that many people had about saving all of the buildings. But I am very pleased that we were able to save the primary building, the home of Western Michigan University. And I think that's proving to be a very nice asset for the university as a whole and the community, which is very, very important.
You have said that you plan a pretty long to-do list for the remainder of your tenure at Western. We'll get to some of that in a little bit, but I guess I want to know, as someone who always does seem to be looking forward and always seems to have the next project in mind, how do you decide when the right point is to say, well, I may get, you know, some of that done, but I'm going to have to leave perhaps some of it to the next president as well?
Oh, there's an adequate amount of work for the next president, and he or she, I think they're going to be warmly welcome at the university. We're trying to do our best to make sure that we have a transition that's good and healthy and smooth for them. I am pleased that our budget is balanced and also pleased that our reserves are a little stronger than they once were, and our overall endowment looks really good. So there's a lot of neat things that are going on and a nice handoff for the next person, as it should be. We have a Create Your Signature program going on where we're really trying to emphasize more and more on what we can do to make sure that our students profile well, that it's evident to future employers, that it's dominant or displayed nicely on their credentials as such, and the unique things that they've done in addition to an outstanding academic program.
You know, speaking of a new president, what advice would you give to him or her?
Well, that's a very good question. Recently, I had the opportunity to attend a forum. I'm on the board of directors of the American Council on Education. And then later in the afternoon, on the second day, some of us were invited to meet with the Sloan Foundation CEO, the Knight Foundation CEO, a social media critic from the New York Times, et cetera, and some lawyers. And we were talking about freedom of expression and freedom of speech on our university campuses and how important that is. But as I listened to it, I'm very practical. I thought we were pretty high in the sky there for a while. But I think my first advice would be, whatever you do, please get to know your students and do so early and really, really make a commitment to interact with them and the diverse nature of your students. I remember a few years ago, we had a speaker on campus that was pretty negative with respect to Muslims and their beliefs. And thank goodness I had some interaction with the Muslim Student Association and could connect with them well and early to make sure that they knew where the president was, they knew where the university was, that, yeah, freedom of speech is always challenging for us, but that we wanted them to know that there is an appropriate way for them to demonstrate their opposition and belief, and they did so, and I was very, very proud of them. But that was all because of trust and relationships. You really have to establish those quickly, and it's important. And they're challenged every day, so you got to stay with it.
Do you see this search process, as it's been laid out, as pretty similar to what was done when you ended up being hired for this job?
Well, to the extent that I'm aware of the search, I
right,
think
you were on the outside looking
yeah,
in 10
right,
years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, right. And also even now, it's very important, I think, the community understand, appropriately so, that we have a great chair of the search committee, that's Trustee Bill Johnston, and a great committee. I think he's put together a nice committee. So I don't know all of the ins and outs of what they're doing and how they're planning and all of that.
You're not on the search committee,
I'm
just
not
to clarify
on the search
that,
committee.
Right.
Right, yeah. Correct. And that's appropriate that I not be. Now, having said that, one of the things I most enjoyed was I did like the interview process. Initially, I met with the search committee in Detroit Airport. I think I was one of 13 they met with. They narrowed that down, brought us to campus. That, in my opinion, was extremely important, that we had the opportunity to interact with various constituents on the university campus. And that ranged from, obviously, our students at both the undergraduate and graduate level, but our respective bargaining units, and as well as PSSO and the APA and a lot of the classified people. It's important that you get the opportunity to interact with them, and you get to know them, and they get to know you, and they can ask questions because there are two things going on there. One is that it's all about fit. And while the university obviously wants to make the right choice, the candidate also wants to make the right choice. And I've been involved in other interviews where, you know, I really enjoyed the interview, but at the end of the day, I didn't really think I was the best fit for what they needed or were looking for at that time.
It was an open search. You know, there's always a question about that of, you know, the campus community gets their chance to view this person before they become president. At the same time, that might scare off a qualified candidate. How did you view that in your role? You know, you were still at Southern Illinois University. Were there people in Carbondale who, when they heard John Dunn was a finalist for president at Western Michigan University, said, hey, wait a minute, we thought you were very happy here?
Well, I was very happy there, and of course, that's close to where I was raised. At the same time, my situation was a little bit different in that I was the interim chancellor. I had replaced the chancellor, and as such, had also made it very clear early on that I would not be a candidate for the chancellorship there. I thought at the time what we needed to do, sort of the esprit de corps on campus, that was the best option. And then there was an element of uncertainty as to, well, would I then return to my previous role as provost or not? I think your fundamental question, though, is a good one, and that is, will an open search scare off very happy, very successful candidates in current positions? And I suspect that's something that this search committee is probably wrestling with. I think it worked in the prior time, but, you know, that's a selfish statement, right? Work for me.
So about 8 months left before your retirement date. And you mentioned there's a pretty long to-do list. Give us maybe a couple things that you're really trying to focus on that you would really like to accomplish before your time is up.
Well, certainly indicated one of those earlier. That's the create your signature and making sure we work with the provost and others on that point. We also have a new and very exciting director of our enrollment management, Dr. Terry Curran. I'm very excited about him. I think he's bringing some really good ideas to us. He's helping us, and I want to support him. Enrollment is important, and I think there's a way and perhaps some new pathways that we ought to explore. I've been traveling rather extensively. A lot of our international partnerships, I continue to do that. I want to do that. The world is available to us, and we want to make sure that we sustain those efforts. So I'm working quite hard also on the relationship with Cooley, making sure that that's fine. And, of course, we're in the final stages of the School of Medicine or accreditation process. So all of that's moving forward in highly desirable ways, but there's always much more to do and a lot of not heavy lifting, but consistent pushing, let me say.
Is there anything on that list of things to do before you leave that is not on there that you wish you could have accomplished?
Well, there's always much more that you wish that you could have accomplished. Certainly, looking at our enrollment, I'd like to have a little more of number of students on our campus. The other is research expenditures. I feel that that's an area that there's so much more that we could and should do, and we've just not been able to get really the full lift. We've had some very nice hits, but I think there's much more out there that we ought to be able to do. We have an outstanding faculty, a great credentialed group of people, we should be far more competitive at the NSF, NIH funding level, federal level. So those are some things that I'm working on and pushing and hoping that we can raise the profile.
So the enrollment numbers came out and found a small overall dip, but there were some encouraging numbers in other areas, minority students, for example, mm-hmm. honor students. But, you know, what is the strategy, I guess, that you think and I realize that the strategy is long term and will go beyond your time as president of Western Michigan University. But what's the strategy for trying to get enrollment numbers back up overall?
And first of all, let me explain to you that in those enrollment numbers now, we do not count, for instance, any of the relationship with WMU Cooley. So, you know, there's another 1,200, 1,100 students that are not counted. And we do count, however, and full disclosure, the medical students at this point. So the strategy moving forward, I think, and I think Dr. Curran has hit that very very nicely, is that our overall marketing, we have a new campaign out on marketing. I think there are things that we can do better with respect to our engagement with students and families early on. Looking at the connection with them, feedback to families and students. And also, I think our financial aid and our packaging and being responsive to young people as well as their families in terms of options and opportunities available to them. We are a great university, and I would classify our year this year as stable. 1.3 down, we actually outperformed what we had projected early on. And our budget was, we were in good shape on the budget. So in looking at all of that, I wasn't too disheartened by that. And there's just a lot of good competition out there. But we're working hard to look at our overall pricing structure, particularly as it relates to non-resident students. And we have some meetings coming up on all of that.
So a possibility that maybe students from out of state, you could lower that rate a bit to try to compete for some of them?
Yeah, we're looking at really what is the sweet spot there that is fair to the residents of Michigan as well as non-residents. And, of course, all of that's changed dramatically. Wherever you were, people my age at one time, the state was providing for, you know, 75 to 80% of your actual expenditures. Now that's down to 25% that the state's providing. So the idea that somehow you're violating your trust with your state government by maybe being more favorable to non-residents is that's a tough argument to sustain today, and I think most of our legislators acknowledge that.
Well, there is actually a passage in the State of the University address where you talked about much of the progress that's been made and said one can only wonder, maybe lament, what more could have been accomplished in a better fiscal climate. Now, some of that may be the economy you're talking about, but is that also a call for a better funding system for higher ed in Michigan?
There is absolutely no question that Michigan must do better. And if we really believe that education is the key to the economy, we need to fund it. And we need to do that in a very dramatic way, in just a very simple way. The business leaders for Michigan, I think, laid it out quite nicely. If you look at Michigan, you look at North Carolina, two states that are very, very similar in many, many ways. North Carolina is spending twice as much in their support for higher education as we do in Michigan. And we're spending twice as much as the folks in North Carolina on our prisoners and prisons. There's something fundamentally wrong with that. And everyone knows that. I don't think I'm saying anything that our legislators and our governor don't fully acknowledge and appreciate. The question is, somebody has to be aggressive, assertive in taking action.
When you say there are similarities between Michigan and North Carolina, is the comparison that Michigan has lost many jobs to manufacturing and North Carolina went through a very similar thing with the textile industry, for instance?
That would be one, but also just this overall size of the states, okay, the demographics of the states. And again, I thought the business leaders for Michigan, a very thoughtful, very bright group of people, laid that out quite nicely. And it is embarrassing. It's embarrassing to all of us. And I want to make sure that we really acknowledge that and that we fund higher education as it ought to be funded.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with Western Michigan University President John Dunn. Also here is Madison Bennett from the Kalamazoo Gazette. MLive put together a report on what state universities spend on athletics. It found that Western's sports subsidy grew about 82% over the last 10 years. You know, there's a lot of students out there who are struggling to pay for education. They may be taking out big loans, and they hear these numbers, and it may not sit well with them. What do you say to that?
Well, first of all, I won't get into a long and elaborate debate with MLive over that. But
Are there some numbers in there that are skewed,
yeah,
in your opinion?
Okay. Absolutely. One thing that the NC2A requires today that it did not in an earlier time is it requires us to report what is the debt load on our athletic facilities. In the earlier comparisons, that was not reported. I do not believe, in addition to that, that indirect costs, well, those are what are called the general university support for athletics, or it would be for a College of Engineering and Applied Sciences, as an example. And that's IT support. It also has to do with overall maintenance of facilities in addition to debt load and those kinds of things. So what I look at is as in relationship to our overall general funds, not all of our funds, but just general funds, we're about $400 million. And if you look at the percentage that has been devoted to athletics, it's been very consistent through those years. It's about 2.4, 2.5% of your funds going for support of athletics. Now, can we do better? As a matter of fact, I have a meeting this afternoon that is really focused on what more can we do to generate external support for athletics so that we minimize and mitigate that burden on the general fund budget as well as on tuition and other related expenses for students and families. So we're conscious of that. We work on that. But at the same time, I think our overall history has been very supportive.
Someone may look at some of the changes which have happened here at Western. You know, the facilities have been upgraded in many places. Football coach P.J. Fleck's salary has gone up, and he is making significantly more than his predecessor. And I suppose people may look at that and say, well, that would make sense in terms of the MLive numbers. Did that money come from elsewhere, I guess, is the question.
Well, we've been very successful with respect to some very nice donations. We have a very elaborate video display at both ends of the stadium, and that, of course, was a $2.2 million gift from an individual to help us with that. So, you know, I think that some of the enhancements have been addressed and handled quite nicely. The other thing is that we're in an excellent conference, the Mid-American Conference. And our overall profile as a conference continues to expand. Our new TV contract is very, I am the president of the President's Council of the Mid-American Conference. We have a great commissioner. We have much better negotiations in terms of what the dollar should be returned to us on our exposure on television. So we are doing much, much better. We're also very attractive. So our guarantees when we go and play other teams, we'll open the season next year at the University of Southern California, and that's a pretty nice payday. And given the way we're going and our team's playing, could be a really nice payday. So now, having said all that, let me put it this way. We need to be constantly alert and aware of what our expenditures are in all of our programs. Athletics, clearly the same. And we're doing our best. I'm very pleased with Kathy Beauregard, you know, one of the most accomplished, certainly one of the most senior athletic directors of a Division I program in the country, and highly regarded, highly respected. And we do a heck of a lot on a pretty thin overall budget. Well, let me add one other thing. On the MLive article, and I try to draw this out with the reporter and help him, when you're trying to do this, you're really looking at apple to orange comparisons. And to get off of our bandwagon and talk about Eastern Michigan offers far more sports than we do, okay? So they have more sports that they're offering than we do. At the same time, we offer ice hockey program, which is a pretty expensive program. Eastern Michigan, Central Michigan does not, and others do not as well. And then the idea that somehow if you drop down a division or so that you're going to save a lot of money. Remember that of the subsidy that goes into, the direct subsidy that goes into support of our athletic programs, 50% of that's returned back to the state. That's in financial aid support. So you have an accounting function where you say, well, you know, there's like $20 million of support that is direct support that goes to athletics from general funds. 9 to 10 million of that comes right back because you then have to pay for the financial aid, student financial aid for those athletes. That includes scholarships and books. And, you know, you can lay that out 100 times for people, and if it doesn't fit the article and it doesn't sound as of great interest, it just doesn't fit.
I do have a question. You know, with Western's successful season thus far, 7-0, it's huge for us. Do you think that's going to bring in some more outside donations after this year?
Well, the you know, of course, the story on that is still out, but thus far we've had an enormously successful season. I don't know how many millions of hits we've had on our athletic website alone. We are what is known as a very attractive program with an outstanding and attractive coach, and people want to follow us, and they want to know what's going on and how did that happen, et cetera. So all of that does lead to an engagement now with more and more alum, and that's good. And so we're working that very hard, as we ought to. It also means that our visibility for a university as a whole, sometimes there's big debates about this. What's the marketing value of all of that? But I think it's pretty high. And when you're out there and you have that much print about a university, I'm quite confident it will have some impact on our overall enrollment.
Just want to note for the audience, we are speaking on Thursday, and by the time people hear this, it's quite possible that Western will be 8-0, hopefully not 7-1. We'll see. You know, you mentioned there an attractive coach, P.J. Fleck. He is getting a lot of attention right now. And, of course, there's a lot of rumors swirling. There's already some Division I programs, including Purdue in the Big Ten, not too far from here, who have fired their head coaches. There's some higher-profile jobs like Louisiana State, where the head coach has been fired, and they're going to be searching. When his name comes up in rumors, how do you address that? And if schools actually do reach out and say, we would like to talk to P.J. Fleck, engage his interest, how is that going to be handled?
Well, the latter part of that is always the courtesy is via the athletics director contact there. But Coach Fleck is really a unique individual in that he's very fond of the community. He's very fond of the university. He fully understands that a data point's a data point, but if you want to establish a trend line, it takes more than one data point. And so I think he has inherently within him a desire to not only make a statement and make an impression, but one of the real questions is sustaining that. And I think that's another challenging level. And I think people like PJ are highly motivated by things like that. How do you take the successes we've had the last two seasons after a disastrous first season, which he would quite frankly acknowledge? Well, those are two good data points. Now we go to another data point and a very successful season thus far. But as he would say, it's only thus far. And one of the things I most admire about him is that he celebrates a victory with his team, but he reminds them on Sunday evening and Monday morning, we're now 0-0. 0-0, guys, and we got another game coming up.
Do you also, though, have to acknowledge that somebody may put an offer in front of him, which is pretty tough to turn down, and just in terms of financial attractiveness? I mean, it could be an awful lot of money at some point. And I guess maybe the question becomes, you know, can there be stability even if you have to make a change at head football coach at some point?
Well, the answer to that, is really going to have to be assessed by Coach B.J. Fleck. But let me say to you that the idea that that money is important, okay, we never want to negate or argue against that, but there's also quality of life and a level of happiness, and there's family issues and considerations. So there are a number of things that any person in a position, whether it be a coach or a president, and, you know, I made a decision after 3 years here, I don't want to talk with anybody else about going somewhere other than here. Was there potential more money? Was there a potential bigger place? Yeah. But look, if you're happy, you're happy. And I think the commitments we've made to PJ are, I think he appreciates deeply. And he'll be very thoughtful and he'll be very fair. And whatever ultimately happens, we wish him as well as we'll recover and move on. And you know, we're going to find a great president soon. If we need to, we'll find a great coach.
Could there also be the possibility of enhancing what he has right now here financially? I mean, maybe not to the point that a really big school can offer, but at least coming back up and showing more appreciation. And if that does happen, does that require more outside dollars, more fundraising?
Yeah, it would be really outside dollars have been the big help and the big support. And I think PJ knows that, and Kathy's very attuned. She's a very smart AD. And I'm quite confident those conversations have occurred already.
You also mentioned being the president of the Mid-American Conference Council of Presidents. So I want to ask you this. We've got a lot of movement going on in college sports these days with teams moving to new conferences, conferences expanding, et cetera. Is the MAC stable right now? Is there any threat of anybody leaving? And is the MAC looking to add any more teams?
I'm very proud of the MAC. It's clearly the most stable of any of the conferences, and we've been a member since 1947. We love the conference. When I'm with my presidents, I don't see anyone opting to move out. Do we keep an eye on what's happening in the market? Are there others who might want to come in that represent the kind of qualities that we believe are essential in terms of other universities? Sure. But right now, we're stable, we're happy, and we're doing really quite well.
Madison?
So if, you know, it does come down to it and PJ does leave, what happens to the row the boat mantra? Is that his or is that the university's?
That's a good question for PJ and also Kathy Beauregard. You know, I think in many ways it is Coach Fleck's sort of persona. And I don't think there'd be a huge arguments or fights over that in a very genteel and respectful conversation as we move forward on that point. It's worked very, very well here. And I think initially it was a little rough when it was introduced, and people have kind of gotten into it. So,
Oh, yeah.
1-11 season will make anything a little rough. But.
Took us a little while to get on board, but, you know, as an alum, eventually we're all rowing the boat.
Western Michigan University President John Dunn, thank you for your time.
Gordon, thank you. It's nice to spend some time with you. And Madison, thank you very much for being part of the interview process. Thank you.
And Madison Bennett of the Kalamazoo Gazette, thank you as well.
Always great being back here.
Coming up on Thursday's West Southwest, we'll have our final campaign interview of the 2016 election season. Plus, we'll be joined by Western Michigan University political science professors John Clark and Peter Wielhauer for analysis of where the race for president and other offices stands in Michigan, with Election Day coming up on November 8th. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.